Thursday, the 29th. Hit the music. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. He was a high school All-American, a college All-American. He was All-Pro in the NFL. But the thing that he's most proud of is during his show in Muncie, Indiana, he made a woman in the crowd laugh so hard she shit her pants. Ladies and gentlemen, Pat McAfee! Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Pat McAfee Show. I am not Pat McAfee, but that's me doing my Pat McAfee impression. I think it's not bad.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad.
I like it.
Pat is on vacation, as many of you that follow his story know. He is with his beautiful lady, Sam. They are somewhere in the Caribbean enjoying sunshine and ocean and sandy beaches. And we're holding down the fort. He wanted us to actually fill in. I am here to do an extended version, a full-blown episode of Behind the Badge, and I have some heroes with me. Hit the music.
Behind the Badge.
Thank you for listening. I am Todd McComas, host of Behind the Badge. Usually it's just a segment where I tell a little story within the Pat McAfee Show. While Pat's gone, he actually had an idea that maybe Behind the Badge should be its own podcast one day. So since he's on vacation, he thought we should try it out. He put me in this studio right now. Vibs and I. Go ahead, Vibs. Let me introduce you first, Vibs, because
bring it on.
Without you, this wouldn't be possible because I can't run that damn board. He's a 26-year-old single dude who ran cross country for IUPUI and Anderson University, not at the same time. I'm going to assume he moved from one school to the other. He's a hilarious stand-up comedian and worked for the nationally syndicated radio program, The Bob and Tom Show, for the last 4 years before joining the team at Barstool Heartland. You hear him every Tuesday and Thursday right here on the Pat McAfee Show, and you see him on Facebook and Twitter every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday as the host of Barstool Heartland's Things You Missed. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Vibbert.
Thank you, Todd. Little secret, I don't know how to run this board either, so
we'll see how it goes. That's the Jeff Vibbert on Twitter. Also in this room, the heroes that Pat has assembled to co-host this show with me. I'm honored to have to my left a 42-year-old married man with four kids. He's been a firefighter for the great city of Indianapolis for 16 years. He retired as a mixed martial arts fighter at the age of 38. He fought in the UFC for 11 years, from 2000 to 2011, where he fought 20 times and was never knocked out, never submitted. In 10 of those fights, that's half of his UFC fights, he won either Fight of the Night, Submission of the Night, or Knockout of the Night awards, which is unprecedented. It's incredible. He was a finalist in the Ultimate Fighter 4, where he lost an incredibly close and wrong decision to Matt Serra that robbed him of a welterweight title shot against George St. Pierre. We're not bitter about that at all. He's the host of Barstool Heartland's MMA 2-Minute Drill, where he helps our fans pick which fighters to bet on in the upcoming MMA bouts. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Lights Out Lytle.
All right, what's happening, guys? Thank you. And yeah, I still don't think about that fight every night.
I bet you don't.
Not every night. Sometimes I take a night off. By the way, Vibs, I did not know you ran. So trust me, was it first that you were at Anderson and then you kind of got too expensive, had to flunk out, whatever happens to the end of IEP wise? Is that kind of more like?
Little do people know, I'm a Division I athlete. Pat and I are
cream of the crop. I would have never guessed that.
You're the only two Division I athletes on the team.
Yep.
On the Barstool team.
And let's be clear, the only reason why he's no longer at Anderson, or he started out at Anderson and then transferred, is because it's a Christian school, and Jeff Vibbert cannot operate at a Christian school.
He lost all religion and got kicked out.
They found out real quick. You don't belong here.
Exactly.
That scholarship
gone.
That man that provided a little insight on what happened to Jeff Vibbert's collegiate career is a 35-year-old married man with no kids. As a younger man, he played football for the University of St. Francis in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's a veteran of the U.S. Army, specifically a proud member of the 1st Squadron, 32nd Cav, inside the 101st Airborne Division, where he served as a cavalry scout As such, he fought for our country in Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. He worked as a cameraman for the hit show Naked and Afraid and for the Detroit Red Wings before coming on board with Barstool Heartland as the director of video production. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who laid down his rifle to pick up a video camera, Ryan Colley.
What a great intro, Todd. That was phenomenal.
That's so, at Wiz Khalifa. At Wiz Khalifa on Twitter.
Wiz Khalifa, yeah. It's a play on the stoner guy. Yeah.
Ryan, let me get this straight. St. Francis is where you went?
Yeah.
What division is that?
Man, hey, throwing stones already, that, man.
Yeah, yeah. That's NAIA. Just, yeah.
And then
I know you're going.
101st Airborne Division. That's 101st Division. Okay, so that's not D1. All right,
that's way below three.
Yeah, that's a few, isn't it? Just one or two. So I just want to make one thing clear. Whenever we're in the podcast studio in the new office, I'm going to be opposite of Lytle. Just. I don't want to get any elbows or, you know, if
you
I say the
sit
wrong
by
thing.
Me, bro. Come on.
No, I do want to sit by you because I think you're a very nice guy, gentle guy. But I think if I said the wrong thing, I'd be put in a headlock.
I do
really
have
quickly.
Some like flashback moments where I just have to choke people.
Yeah, I saw like Muhammad Ali sometimes, like he would wake up from a nap and
start swinging,
start knocking out caretakers. Yeah.
he's harmless. I mean, watch this. He has to wear those headphones because he can't hear us because he has cauliflower.
What did he say? Is he talking
He's
got
to pipe it through quick. Like, his headphones are peaking right now.
Yeah, they're barely on.
Chris, you had a pretty good weekend, buddy.
I had a fantastic weekend, man. It was good. I was actually in New York City cornering one Matt Mitrione versus the legend Fedor Emelianenko. You know, Fedor is considered the greatest heavyweight of all time. Went about 10 years without losing. Matt put him away in about a minute and 14 seconds. So pretty awesome, though. Double knockdown. They both threw right hands, both connected, both dropped to the ground. Fortunately for Matt, he's a little younger and a little bigger, I guess. So he kind of jumped up faster, got on top of Fedor, hit him twice. I thought he killed him, but he didn't. Thank goodness.
We need to put your mic up here a little bit.
Okay, yeah, there we go. So it was a great night. Besides that, we had a lot of fun afterwards.
I rented the fight. Did anybody else see it that's in the room here?
Just saw the after.
Okay. Well, it actually was only a highlight. I mean, that was right.
the whole fight was.
I rented the fight and literally jumped off the couch and freaking high-fived myself. It was so fucking cool. Like, Fedor used to be just the scariest guy on the planet. It was just... knocking fools out.
Comes
left and
out
right.
There with that just demeanor, doesn't care at all. You know,
oh,
just not caring, not enthusiastic, just bland face, like whatever.
Yeah,
if he dies,
doesn't
he
get
dies.
Angry?
You know, that Ivan Drago in this.
Exactly.
And he just wrecked people all the time.
And that big overhand right was just devastating. So when they literally, it was like Rocky III.
Yeah.
Was that Rocky III or Rocky II?
Rocky II.
Yeah, Rocky II. When they hit each other at the same time. Go down, but I thought Matt had the best post-fight interview I've probably ever heard when he said, he goes, yeah, I don't remember what happened. I remember we went in at the same time. I kind of woke up and I was on my butt and I looked over and I'm like, oh my shit, he's on his back. He just jumped on him and knocked him out. It was awesome.
Matt does do a great post-fight interview.
Yeah, he really does. You guys trained hard for that fight. Luckily, we were around, loosely around while
you were there.
Doing some training and watched the two of you spar all the time. So it was exciting to see him come out on top. That's going to be big for his career, I think, right?
Well, that's going to be huge. I mean, knocking out a legend like that, he is the number one guy in the Bellator heavyweight division. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think a lot of fighters are going to start leaving the UFC for Bellator for two reasons. They're not paying as much in UFC right now, hard to believe, and they're taking away the sponsorship. So two assets that Bellator has is going to pay dividends, I guarantee it.
Nice. What, Wiz?
Yeah.
Ryan Colley. You had a pretty interesting weekend. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah.
You were sent up on assignment in Michigan.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Where marijuana is legal.
Yep.
Just to observe and report at the Cannabis Fest.
That's correct.
Correct? You took a crew with you?
So, yeah, we took Sean Latham. Comedian.
I think he's still there, by the way. He forgot.
He's never gone home.
He doesn't know it's over yet.
He's still there wondering where
it's
everybody
still
went.
Saturday, isn't it? No, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, we had a good time. We got a lot of good footage. Nobody did anything illegal.
Yeah, people might think it's weird that we're talking about that on Behind the Badge, but in Michigan, it's legal.
Right.
It's a legal event,
mm-hmm.
and you guys just went there to see what it was about.
Yeah, yeah, and to be honest, we found out a lot of stuff. We sat in on a seminar with veterans, kind of gives you an idea of why veterans use cannabis and why, you know, what the benefits are mm-hmm. for PTSD and things like that. It's pretty informative stuff. So we were able to at least get 20 minutes of actual learning in
for the whole weekend.
For the whole weekend. And I think we fried our brains the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. Right.
So,
well, you know, I got to be honest with you. As a firefighter, first of all, I hope we don't have any animosity here towards me and Todd because, you know, police.
We'll talk
fire,
about
they tend
it.
To, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, me being a firefighter, we see a lot of heroin overdoses. And I think that is directly attributed to pharmaceutical, you know, prescription meds, prescription drugs. So I, for one, would love to see medical marijuana be an alternative, you know, drug for some, not every situation, but for some of these situations, people are being put on these drugs that they were being told for many years they weren't addictive, they're getting into problems, and it leads to heroin overdoses. So I would love to see some more research and things being done to make this a reality in every state, to be honest with you.
Right. And the panel that we sat in or that we listened to, each and every one of them are, you know, members of the VA and have all been prescribed, you know, opiates.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them take 16 pills a day,
exactly.
Three times a day.
Which isn't good for you.
No,
same thing with
horrible.
The NFL we're talking about. How many NFL players became addicted to pain meds?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
now,
and it just completely wipes away your personality.
It just eats away your internal organs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying marijuana could be the cure for all that. I don't believe that, but I think there could be some usage where it could help in this situation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's one thing.
Everybody knows that unicorn horn dust is the ultimate cure for almost everything.
Right, right.
But short of that,
you can get real high off unicorn horn dust.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
If you can find it.
It's what's in computer duster stuff. I've been having that for years.
Hey,
so you can just buy that stuff at Office Max.
Some girl was driving her car, like a 16-year-old girl in high school, driving it, doing computer dust, inhaler like that, passed out and ran into something. I was like,
yeah, you can get really fucked up on.
Oh, you get the wah-wahs. Yeah. You ever got those? I call it the wah-wahs.
I had to go to the BMV the other day because I had a birthday and my license expired on my birthday. Mm. Didn't realize it till the next day. I was like, oh, shit, I'm expired. I should go get it renewed. So I go to the license branch. I haven't been to the license branch for a while because, you know, you can renew online now mm-hmm. all the time. So I haven't been like 3-4 years. And I go in there and get all my stuff updated. And I have a change of address that it's moved. So she's like, well, you need some pieces of mail. And I was like, oh, you know, I got that out of my car. Luckily, because I've been moving. I had a bunch of stuff in the door of my truck. So she's like, oh, but please hurry. We're really backed up. And I was like, okay. So I run out and I hit the first door to go outside. And there's like a stopper that stops the door like halfway from where you think it would stop. And it hit. I pushed it so like it bounced back, and this huge metal door hits me right in the temple, mm-hmm. my forehead, so hard that I yelled, "Motherfucker!" In this, in the middle of this BMV. Luckily, there was nobody there who spoke English, but it was. I literally almost knocked myself out. It was the closest, other than the time I think you hit me in the gym. It was the closest that I've been to getting knocked out in a very long time.
They probably get that a lot though at the BMV. There's probably a lot of people just sprinting out of there. It's right. Like they see it all the time.
And they probably just get random, you know, cuss words, people yelling.
Right.
Yeah, for no reason. No. So yeah. They probably were totally used to that.
Yeah.
They're probably looking around like, who is he referring to? Which motherfucker behind the desk is he talking about? Yeah.
Motherfucker Jones. He's in the back.
Yeah, he's in the back.
We miss Pat, Nick, and Diggs. Pat, as I said, is on vacation in the crib with his lady Sam. And Nick and Diggs are in somewhere in Mexico. Where are they at? You know?
Punta Cana, I think is where
Punta Cana. And by the pictures I've seen online and the videos, they're having one hell of a time.
Yeah, Diggs, actually, I would say Diggs doesn't look like he's having fun at all.
Yeah.
I mean, not dancing.
He wasn't
not drinking
at all. No. Yeah. But, you know, it's weird. I had to, at one point, send Pat a screenshot of the Webster's Dictionary definition of vacation. Because he was working.
We've gotten more texts this week than we ever have about work.
Yeah.
He just keeps texting us about work.
I can't.
He doesn't trust you guys.
Poor guy.
He's on your own.
He's a worker, man. He's just work. I'm like, man, enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
I felt bad. reading the text, I felt bad.
He's right to not trust us.
Yeah, that's 100%.
Totally, I don't know. I see you on the board. What are you doing over there? You're pushing buttons, pulling levers.
And he's
I don't
drinking
know what's
coffee.
I shouldn't
the top
be having this open cup right by the board, but whatever.
Let's be honest. We can fuck some shit up.
Oh, yeah. We can.
Yeah, we're very easily capable of fucking some shit up.
We've
proved that a couple times. I have specifically. So I get why he can't relax, but boy, I wish he could. That guy, he's gonna die too young. That's his dream. He wants to. He keeps
shooting
saying he's
star,
to,
right?
But I like for him to live a long time.
Yeah, I'd like to keep him around.
Yeah,
yeah.
We got some questions. I asked for some questions because I'd like to do this on behind the badge.
Hang on, I didn't get to talk about my weekend.
Oh yeah.
What'd you do this weekend? Because it was probably full of.
What'd you
STDs
do? Run? You just constantly ran all weekend?
I feel a little left out. Yeah, first off, there's no reason I should be in this room right now. We have a Marine vet, an Army vet, a badass firefighter, and then me.
We need someone to pick on.
You said a room full of heroes. I'm going to take it. I was a narc cop for 2 days.
That's true. You do have some experience. Under your belt.
Yeah.
I've sharpened my teeth in the field.
You bought some cigarettes illegally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put away an 80-year-old woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
She deserved it.
Closed her business
gotta
now.
Guess.
Thanks a lot. Poor old lady. I thought I remembered you, Granny.
The law is the law, all right?
I get it. Exactly.
It's not a gray area.
Yeah. I've been...
Let's see. I ran. I fucked a bunch of hot chicks. I ran. I drank some beer. I ran. Was that your weekend pretty much?
Pretty much. Well, I haven't been running as much. For those of you at home, I have an underdeveloped quad. So,
what?
Yeah, your quad. There's four muscles in your quad, and one of them isn't developed enough. So,
is that a genetic thing or just a weight room problem?
I don't know. I think I needed some more time to cook in the fetus.
This is par for the course for Jeff Vibbert. I feel like.
Were you a premature baby?
I think. I don't know, but I think
it still looks like a premature.
Still a premature. I think my quad took a little less time. Like they gave up a little bit on that, and they just went to the dick, and they're just like, "Yeah, they'll just cook this a little more." Anyways,
your dick took all the quad molecules from your body.
Yeah, you had a set range on weight, and they were like, "All right, well, we can't go over 140." So we
you gotta. Distribute the I've been rehabbing like my quad, like trying to not be on it so much. So I've been doing laps in the pool, and I went to this gym. I got like a free 2 week pass, and I've been going to this gym, and I'm doing laps, and all of a sudden this lady stops me in the pool and goes, "Sir, you're gonna have to leave. We have a class that's gonna happen." And I was like, "Oh, what class is it?" She's like, "It's water aerobics." And she's like, "You're more than welcome to join." And I was like, "Fuck it. I have to do this." So
you attended the water aerobics class.
I attended the water aerobics class. It's me and 20, 80-year-old women that just coming out of the... So we're in there.
Probably one of them that you put away.
Probably. Yeah. No, she's in prison right now.
Yeah, she's in for a long haul.
But we're doing it. And I'm not going to lie. Water aerobics is pretty hard. And the instructor the whole time is just like, "Ladies... and guys, what are we? Water warriors!" And we're just fucking going as hard as possible. I loved it.
All right, so we're going to get that on video. Yeah. You got to go back and we're going to get that.
Yeah, can we go back and put you in that?
For sure.
Film it?
How many numbers did you get while you were there?
If the girl standing next to me got a fat ass, I'm going to give her my number.
Jesus.
A lot of one-piece bathing suits. I'm a fan of them.
Yeah.
With the little skirts at the bottom.
Well, yeah.
With those ladies, it hides what they need to, you know, so one-piece would be best.
I like a little left of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been my weekends.
You never fail.
Yeah.
To amaze.
You and a swimming pool full of 80-year-old women.
Ladies.
Yeah, just kicking it.
We're going to go to MCL, hit up the early bird special if anyone wants to come.
See, I don't see the opportunity there. I'm like, I got to get out of here. And then you're like, "I'm going to stay and be a part of this."
Hey, water aerobics is where it's at. If you go hard, you get a good workout.
Well, I mean, not the water aerobics part, just the surrounded by all the seniors.
Hey, they're people too.
Yeah. Well,
did they make fun of your underdeveloped quad?
Whatever
you just
it
kept
takes
swimming
to get
around
that quad
in circles.
Up there,
yeah. You can only go left.
He's dedicated. Don't take that away from him. Whatever it takes, he'll be in there with 80-year-old women if you ask to. Whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Tell him.
I just kept yelling, "I got a bad fin."
Hey. Swimming in circles.
Yeah.
He's trying to show why he's a hero, you know. Whatever we've done, he'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah, he's got the mentality, you're right. Exactly. Yeah.
Division 1 athlete.
He's willing to battle through injuries, overcome shortcomings.
I'm a miracle.
Yeah, you,
you are a miracle. You're the bumblebee of humans. Like, you shouldn't even be here.
No.
But you made it. It was a complicated birth, evidently way too early. Half your body didn't develop.
Yeah.
But you're like, fuck it, I'm going to make it.
I'll say this. You would have made it over half of my basic training platoon.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like that.
Easily.
I've always wanted to do like the Navy SEAL Special Forces training. See how long I could last.
Yeah, I'd say about 5 minutes on that.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you have to check a box that says like underdeveloped quad?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that happens at the MEP station, and you go, and they go, you're not going to make it today. Yeah.
What is the farthest you've ran?
22 miles. For practice. Yeah.
For practice.
Yeah. We'd run like 20 miles on Sunday, Monday, whichever day was our long run day.
22 miles at one time.
At one time, yep.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
What's the farthest you ever ran?
Oh, geez. 13.1. I did the mini marathon.
Oh, yeah. I did too. Well, I did too once. Good for me. I forgot. Yeah.
Pat yourselves on the back.
Yeah.
And I had one of my buddies. He's on the fire department now. He was in the military before, but he does these things where you go and you run 100 miles all at once. I couldn't believe it. I said, I don't do that in a year, maybe. You know, he does 100 miles in one day. All in 25 hours last time.
Are they those ultra marathons?
I guess. 100 miles? That's ultra to me.
Those are people that die too young. Literally, yeah. They use up their life cycle of
you only got so
shit.
Many beats in that heart.
Yeah.
Used them all on that day.
You ever hear those Ironman triathletes? They just fall over dead at like 35.
That's why I quit doing them.
Yeah. You did it something much safer. You just, for 11 years, let giant dudes punch you in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember much of that, so it doesn't matter. Did I? Are you sure?
Yeah. I got some questions from the internet.
Let's hear them, baby.
Fans
come
of the
on.
Pat McAfee Show.
What do we
ask
got
for
here?
Some cop questions and fireman questions. We're going to go through the cop questions first.
All right, let's hear it.
So, Ralph Sampson asks, have you ever had sex with another cop? Boy or girl, it's 2016. We don't judge. He's being funny. First of all, it's 2017, Ralph. Yeah, that's a typo,
is that the formal,
if you just need to refresh your calendar app.
Is that the former basketball player?
Yeah.
Seven-footer,
so.
One of the Twin Towers, Ralph Sampson.
Secondly, yes, I've had sex with another cop, and it was a girl. It was a little weird, I'll be honest. A little weird.
Weird, what?
Handcuffs?
Same
handcuffs
department?
Handcuffs involved?
Well, for one thing, like when I would go down on her, she would make me do the alphabet backwards. Which is weird. Which is very weird. So, but other than that, like, actually, no, it wasn't bad. Because she's a girl, right? It's a little weird. Like, she has a gun all the time, which is a little weird, right? And she's not afraid to use it. She's a cop.
Yeah.
They're really good at telling. Cops are really good at telling when people are lying.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't lie to her.
Yeah. I don't. There are some cop-on-cop marriages that happen and flourish, but I don't know how. Seems like my buddy, he's married to another. He's a state trooper. She's a state trooper. And they stay married somehow. And I don't know how you do it. Cop personalities, I think, don't mesh well.
What about detective to detective?
I think even worse.
It's got to be.
That would be way worse.
It's got to be.
You have a very inquisitive mind. It's like my wives used to always, like, if I wasn't happy with an answer or something, it was like, and I would go into interview mode and just try to dig and dig and dig. Like, well, that doesn't make sense. You spent how much at the, you know?
Well,
yeah.
It worked for Bones on the show Bones. They were married and they.
It did.
So.
It did.
Good point.
Here's another question. Bones. Brandon asks, what was the best high speed chase you were ever in? I had three of these, actually. My third favorite, we were hunting down a fugitive in Franklin, Indiana, and we got the guy cornered, like we saw him in a Walmart parking lot. We're like, oh, there's his vehicle. He's just sitting out there in it. So we were in unmarked cars. We're like, well, let's just drive up real slow, and then we'll kind of get on both sides of him, and then we'll zoom in, block him in, and then we'll have the uniform people swoop in. And
solid plan.
Made us right away. Like, just rolling up, like you see, he's just looking at us. Then all of a sudden, he just guns it before we can get him cut off. And he goes out of the Walmart parking lot onto US 31, which is a, you know, it's a busy state highway. And it's like 7 p.m. So people are
out. It's hot, yeah.
Yeah. And he crashes into this lady's car and gets through the light and goes the wrong way, like going southbound in the northbound lanes of US 31 at about 100 miles per hour in this SUV. And so we're chasing. We're in the right lane, you know, but we got lights on and stuff. And then people are starting to join in behind us. But 100 mile an hour, and he is, it's like a movie. Like, he was weaving in, and I'm like, how is he missing cars? Somebody's going to die. So we were just about ready to say, pull off. We just need to end the chase, you know? So he slows down. And before we could do it, he lost control, spun out, and went to this, like, restaurant parking lot. And then we're like, oh, we got him. Somehow he gets it going right before we can get there. It takes off again into this housing addition. And then we're the first ones on, and we make the turn, and, like, the SUV's there with the doors open. He's not there. So we just keep driving through the addition and go dark, all the lights out. And then next thing I know, I see like a little white thing bouncing. So we pull up and we're like right next to him. He's just running along through yards. And he goes and he sees us. And I'm like, all right, hey, you know, and he takes off between two houses. So I pull it around this other house real quick. And I'm like, boy, this is perfect. We're going to be the ones to catch him. This is awesome. So I log it in park. We jump out, and a brand new guy with us, was a rookie on the team, jumps out of the back seat. Me and my buddy Dave are in the front seat, and this was the first time in this Tahoe we were driving. And somehow when I put it in park, I hit a button or something and locked the doors, and I couldn't figure out how to get the doors open. So Brad takes off into the dark right on this guy. I don't know if he's armed, whatever. We can't get out of the fucking truck. So finally, when we get out, we get over there. Brad's got him down. He's got a gunpoint. He holsters his gun. He handcuffs him and everything.
Brad was the rookie?
Yeah, brand new rookie. It was his first night out with us.
God, what a day.
Yeah.
That could have been disastrous if you guys couldn't get out and you come back and Brad's laying there beat up. I know. Gun gone.
Sorry, dude. That was my whole
fear.
My
bad, Brad.
Yeah. The guy just like pulls his pants down, strips him naked, beats the shit out of him, yeah, hides him up in his lady's backyard. Sorry, dude. Couldn't figure out the door lock.
Yeah, I think you got to quit the force after a day like that.
Yeah.
This chase started in a Walmart parking lot. Is that par for the course? Is that where they all start?
That's where most of them
start. So much goes down in a Walmart parking lot. That my second favorite pursuit was at a Gander Mountain parking lot in Greenwood, Indiana. And I think I was still undercover then, before I was on the fugitive team. But we went there, we do a buy, like a controlled buy. My buddy Mike was undercover, and he meets this guy there. And we are littered in the parking lot with undercover cars and guys that don't look like cops. So we really got it surrounded. We just needed to tighten in once the call was made to swoop in and arrest him. So the exchange is made, dope for money. They call and bar. Tight. It was perfect. We're like, man, we would be boxed in. He can't go anywhere. It's going to be good. We'll just get out at gunpoint. This dude says, nope, fuck it. Puts it in reverse. Just starts ramming the fuck out of my buddy Tony's truck. It's right behind him. Probably 8-9 times until he creates enough space. Like, he moved his truck backward and got out from in between the cars. And then it's on. I was just getting out of this Franklin officer's car. Mike is driving. So I'm open the door, just getting ready to jump out, and I see this car turn around and it heads straight toward Mike, the original undercover that was there to buy the dope. And like, he's going to run him over. So I pull out my gun, and I'm thinking I may shoot him to stop him from running over Mike. And about that time, the guy driving the car I'm in just takes off. So it throws me out of the car, and I catch it by the little hand thing, you know, that's above the door. So the door's open, and he's taking off as fast as his car will go, like Fast and the Furious. He's like freaking, you know,
Dominic Toretto.
Yeah, so sideways. And I'm hanging out of the door. Like, literally, I'm just like, it's all I can do to hang on right now. I'm about to fly
this
out.
This old shit
animal. I was screaming. I was like, stop the car.
Were you shooting with the other free hand? That would have been pretty awesome, dude. Hanging out with one hand, shooting with the other.
Taking aim.
Yeah.
I was screaming at him to stop, but he's so jacked up, he wasn't hearing me. But finally, he catches on. Oh, shit, I'm about to lose him. So when he corrects himself and he's going straight, again, we're like the second car behind the bad guy's car now. I literally was hanging out of the side of this Cadillac with my gun out with the other hand, hanging on with the strap on the inside, and it was like, I'm just going to shoot through the back glass. I'm gonna stop this thing right now before he hits anybody else. And I didn't. I was like, Gander Mountain parking lot. You're trying to shoot in a moving car. Bad shit could happen, right? So I don't. But he ends up taking off onto the main road, and he turns right instead of left, and it's a dead end, luckily. So he ran into this dead end, stopped. And when he got out, the mother had his like 8-year-old little brother him in the back seat that we never saw the whole time.
You didn't shoot that kid.
Yeah. So like, it was like the gods just were like, yeah, don't fire right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that was my second favorite because it was pretty crazy. It was literally like a crash-up derby. The Franklin Police Department had owned four undercover cars at the time.
He wrecked
lost every one of them. Lost every one of them in that buy.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. What is protocol when a guy is just bashing into your car like that? I mean, what do you do?
Any time that you can articulate that your life's potentially in danger or a third person's life is potentially in danger, you're allowed to use lethal force. So you can shoot.
So right. Really, it's all about justification. If you can justify why you had to shoot and kill this guy, you're good.
Yeah.
Because,
like,
I mean,
you shoot,
right there, you probably could have because he was ramming people. But yeah. Not when you're chasing from behind. I think that you're
right. Right. Just to make them stop. No. Yeah. Can't
right.
Shoot.
I mean, if he's bashing, you get to shoot his tires out of the way.
Yeah.
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 Who pays for the damage to the cars?
You do, brothers.
No. Well, like, the department I worked at is self-insured, so it just came out of our budget, out of our vehicle budget.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what Franklin did. Probably, I don't know, probably laid off some teachers.
So,
yeah.
So if you're under vehicle budget, you're like, all right, let's just do some cool shit. This is last month.
Right. We got money to burn.
Yeah. Let's run a vehicle over a cliff.
That'd be awesome.
I got one last.
Let's hear the other one. Let's hear number three.
So number three, I used to chase this dude, Mike Petrie, around Shelby County, Indiana. He was like a real prolific car thief, but he wouldn't like steal cars to like chop them up and sell them or anything. He would just steal them to drive them around. He was a habitual traffic violator, lost his license for life. He was always drunk and driving. So he would just wait, basically.
Typical Shelbyville guy.
Yeah, exactly. He would wait until a cop would pull him over, and he'd be like, no, fuck it. I'm just going to take off through this field. And he'd just drive his car off and crash it near some farm, and then he would run and grab a farmer's old truck, and he could hotwire it real quick because he was real good at hotwiring old trucks. And then he would drive that stolen truck around until the next cop went to stop him for something.
Life gets crazy. Pretty boring in Shelbyville.
So like two or three times this happens where he gets away from a cop in a pursuit because they ran the plate and it's a stolen truck, and he doesn't care, man. He just drives like there's no tomorrow and crashes out, runs until he finds a new truck. Like three times it happens. So finally, we knew who he was, so I got a warrant for him. And then I'm trying to find him. So he just disappears into Indianapolis somewhere. And he's a big crackhead and dealer, too. So finally, I get a tip that he might be at his brother's house, which is like 10th and Post Road, not too far from your firehouse. And so I sit up there, I grab a Shelby County Sheriff's deputy, put him in the car with me, and we sit surveillance. I had this old, ridiculous Ford Taurus back in like the ugly years of Ford Taurus.
So when were the good years? But go ahead.
So we're sitting there watching his house, and we see the stolen truck's there. The last stolen truck we knew he had is in the parking lot or in the driveway. So we're sitting there. And we sit down for about an hour, and then I'm like, I'm going to call for a backup and get some uniformed troopers in the area. So I do that, and I've been down to call for help, and I hang up the radio. I look up, and the fucking truck's gone. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? The guy riding with me, Mike, where's the truck or whatever? He's like, I don't know, I was watching you. And I'm like, the truck drove away. So I'm like, well, I couldn't have left but just a few seconds ago. So we just go driving everywhere, and I let all the troopers know, look for this truck. Well, a trooper gets behind it on the interstate. And I'm like, all right, we're trying to catch up to you. So a bunch of us catch up, and by now the guy knows it's had, so he just takes off like a bat out of hell, through the hood, 100 miles an hour, however fast his truck would go, just flying through alleys, just no care at all for the public safety around him or his own safety. And so he loses us, and then while we're trying to find him, we hear a big crash. So it's his MO. He just crashes the truck and finds a new one, right? So we can't get to him in time. He's gone. And then next thing you know, like a half hour later, some guy reports his truck stolen. So we're like, fuck, he's out on another truck. So finally, I get a big break on this guy. I go to my best friend's house. He lives out in the country. And just to visit. And I pull in the driveway, and I'm like, huh, looks like that fucking stolen truck that Petrie's supposed to have in the neighbor's parking lot or the neighbor's driveway. So I look. I get my binoculars.
Get
I go inside my buddy's
here.
House. I'm looking through, and I go, Do you know your neighbors very well? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, what's that truck? He's like, I don't know. She dates this shithead that shows up every now and then. It camps out for like 3 days
awesome.
At a time. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's my guy. So I call for help. I'm like, man, he's here at this house. We need to get it surrounded. Go in there. So we get a warrant for him, and they won't answer the door. So we have to kick the door, go in and get him. And when we're there, there's a shit ton of meth, crack, and heroin. Like the three big ones. He's got it everywhere, like under this table. So we find it under this table where they stashed it. We're laying it out. He's handcuffed. We're going through everything. And this answers another question. Somebody asked me if I had a funny DNR story about any DNR officers. Well, this we call them turtle troopers, the DNR officers.
Turtle troopers. So
they're good guys, but, you know, they just do a different thing. So there was a DNR officer, my buddy, that was there helping us. And so we got him down. I'm trying to flip him at this point. Like, where's all this dope coming from? Help us out, whatever. We'll help you out. And it's all laid out on the table. And this DNR officer walks in, and he lays down, slaps down this bird feather on the table in front of all the dope. And he goes, "What is this?" And he's like, fucking feather, man. He goes, "That's a songbird feather. That's a federal offense. Illegal taking of a songbird feather is a federal offense. I can put you in federal prison right now." And he goes, "Are you fucking kidding me right now?" He looks at, "I got meth, coke, and heroin. You want to give me a hard time about a fucking feather? I found it on the ground, man."
Oh, well, okay. Well, you better not touch those birds.
It was hanging in his rearview mirror. This DNR officer thought he just freaking got that, Dillinger.
It reminds me of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Will Ferrell plays a park ranger, and they're trailing Jay and Silent Bob all across the country, and he's like the fucking park ranger trying to bring him down.
Exactly.
And you know, that guy, I kind of like a lot about what he was doing, and I don't blame him necessarily. I blame the game Grand Theft Auto, because that's all he was doing. He was wrecking and grabbing the next one. Wrecking and grabbing the next one. That's what you learn on that game.
I think they made that game off of him, to be honest.
I love that his MO was that he had to wreck it and then grab another one.
It was incredible. I can't remember. I think the final count was like eight stolen cars. He was just crazy. and just driving around, he'd get away from you guys until
he found another one.
It was slippery.
Do you know what kind of a songbird it was?
I do not.
Was it a black cape chickadee?
It might have been
a downy woodpecker, an American golden finch. I've got all the songbirds.
How many different species of songbirds?
Oh, there's a lot of songbirds.
A lot of them.
I bless this DNR officer.
Yeah,
he's looking out for
our songbirds.
Listen to people at home. If you find a really pretty feather on the ground, don't hang it from your rearview mirror.
No,
you could be violating federal law.
My dog picks up goose feathers. Is that illegal? Because they're protected.
Yeah,
I think you need to keep your dog under control.
Yeah, she's out of control.
Yeah.
I got firefighter questions.
All right, let's hear them. Come on, I can answer these.
Michael Filosa asks, what's the strangest thing you've seen as a firefighter on a call?
Man, you know, that there's just so many you don't even remember because they're all really strange. Every day you get something weird. I remember not too long ago, I went into a house. We got called for an alarm, and we show up, and you could tell as soon as you walk in, this lady, she's kind of like a shut-in. She's there all the time. And so we go, okay, where's the alarm coming from? She's like, well, it's right down here. And we go down to the basement. And as soon as I walk in, you know something's wrong because there's a lot of mannequins set up in there. And like sitting on the couch, standing up, not with clothes on, all those up, just mannequins. And I'm like, these are her friends. You know, this is
not like she was a seamstress.
No, nothing like that. Nothing else in the house. And she just walks by like nothing happens. And we're all kind of looking at these mannequins. We're just like, is this going to... Well, it's right over here with the alarm. It didn't even mention it. We're just like, well, we better put a check mark on this house because they're going to be dead bodies found there. Something's going on. So this lady just had mannequins set up all over. I don't know if she shut it as her friend.
What time of day was it?
It was in the middle of the day.
Like
3 o'clock. Crazy.
I'm just trying to figure out if maybe she was taking them out of their pajamas and into their, you know, regular daily outfits.
They weren't all dressed in clothes. It was just bizarre.
But like, they were posed on furniture.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
All of them watching TV with the remote control.
It was bizarre. It's like, okay.
She was probably trying to Buffalo Bob you.
Quite possibly. You don't call us because we came. There was four of us. You getting to take all of us out? I don't think so.
You never know why booby traps, though.
Yeah, I didn't touch much. To be honest with you. Yeah. Well, we had this about 2 weeks ago, we had a call. It was a Sunday, and it was a Kroger, and they're like, yeah, we have a guy who's drunk in the bathroom. So we showed up in there. I walk in the bathroom, and this guy's like cleaning up the sink. I'm like, where is he? And he's like, they're like, this is him right here. And he looked, you know, well dressed, you know, he didn't act drunk at all. And I was like, this is him. They're like, yeah, he wouldn't wake up. We're like, well, what are you doing, man? He grabbed some beer, and he went back there and drank it. And I was like, you can't buy it. He was like, I can't buy it on Sunday. I was like, that's true.
It's true.
Been there before.
And he was like, well, I mean, technically, I didn't leave with it, so I didn't really steal it. I'm like, well, technically, you didn't pay for it.
You're drinking it.
You can't do it. So the police were there. We left. So about 4 hours later, we get a call from Target. Like, we got some drunk guy here. Set up Target. It's the same stores. Same guy. And he's trying to go to the hemp. Well, I technically had it. Look, dude, we've already went over this. You can't drink it and not pay for it. And he's like, and he wasn't acting drunk. And he's like, I'm not even drunk. And then the lady goes, you were just in the shoe aisle chewing on a shoe. And I was like, what? The guy, yeah. And I said, did you?
Sometimes
yeah,
you get hungry.
I did. I was like,
drunk.
Good God, man. So that just happened a couple weeks ago. I remember
they
another
have pizza
one.
Pizza Huts at Target.
Yeah, I know.
That's a hell of a bar crawl.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good bar crawl.
I think you guys deal with more crazy people than even cops do.
Yeah. This was a fun. This was beyond bizarre. We had one. We go in the bathroom, and the guy had... I mean, you walk in, there's blood on the ceiling. Blood on, it looked like from, The Shining when blood just comes over. There's blood all over the place. Like, what the hell's going on? Look in the bathtub. He's dead in the bathtub. Blood everywhere. Like, what happened? He's got like one of those circular saws. Been complaining about having knee pain forever. Doctor wouldn't do anything. He tried to cut his leg off from the knee down with a circular saw, bled out and killed
Jesus.
Himself. He wasn't trying to kill himself. He was trying to cut his leg off. Below the knee,
literally
above
thought,
the knee.
I'll be able to accomplish this.
Maybe he was, I don't really know, but we were just like, are you kidding me?
Jesus. Yeah. I bet he got pretty far into it.
Oh, he did well. I mean, he's like Vib. He just kept going. He just kept trying no matter
that's
what.
That's a persistent.
That guy's a badass, though. Like, that's insane.
He's insane, but I mean, these are, I can't even think you just see stuff like this all the time. You're just like, what is happening?
Jesus. I mean, the blade's going to catch on the bone. And
he's
jam.
Trying to go through the bone.
Definitely.
I'm not going to lie. I've thought about doing that with my underdeveloped quad, but I can't pull the trigger.
Now you know how it ends. Don't do it, buddy.
No,
don't
I'm out.
So. Yeah, if you do, let us know so we can get a tourniquet on it.
Yeah.
Tourniquet first is the rule here. So those are just a couple that I can think of offhand that...
Crazy
but I'll
people.
Talk to you next week and maybe we'll have some more.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
I bet you got a million of them.
Yeah.
People want to, they kept asking, like, are they like, do firefighters and cops really don't get along or is it just a thing? And I think it's a friend, like, I don't know what you guys talk about in the way of cops when you're alone in the firehouse, like when you all have your shirts off and you're putting suntan oil on each other.
We tickle each other. We tickle each other.
Making chili and watching movies. But
we do watch movies.
There's no animosity at all. What are you talking about?
It's a friendly rivalry, but cops secretly are...
They're jealous.
They're jealous of firemen. Because firemen get all the women.
Well, you got a question over it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish what you're going to say, Todd.
Oh, so firemen get all the women.
That was it. That's all I cared about.
They have a way better schedule. They have awesome workout facilities within their firehouse.
We
so
get
a lot
to
of them
eat,
are in shape.
Sleep, nap, play video games, whatever you want to do. I know all the time when we would have cops come over and we're, watching a movie, cooking food, they'll be like, I got to use the restroom. Is that all right? We're like, yeah, I guess. Go ahead. And they come back through and they just shake their head. They're just pissed. Like, man. I got in the wrong line. Yes, you did. Sorry, buddy. Go back out there. Go get a fried donut, buddy.
What Brody Buckeye sent a thing. He wants to know what firefighter groupies are called.
Well, to be honest with you, those are called women because all women all women want to be with the firefighters. So there's no specific group. It's just general.
There's no name for them.
Hose.
Women.
Like,
I like that, though.
Cops, we have holster sniffers, we call them.
I love that.
Yeah, there's badge bunnies is another name.
Badge
I think,
bunnies
but,
is a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, but my favorite is holster sniffers.
We just call them women. Cause,
really?
Just
who typically
hose hounds, nothing?
Constant. That'd be a good one.
Who typically arrives on the scene first? Whether it's a...
That just totally depends on where it's at. If it's right by the firehouse, we will. If it's out farther away, they will. Or sometimes they're just patrolling around. It just depends. You know, this is embarrassing, though. Sometimes when we get called on runs, they say, the scene is not secure. You got to wait for law enforcement. So we'll be sitting there, like, down the block, and I'm embarrassed. I'm like, give me my axe. I'll go in there. I don't really care. But, I mean, we have to sit back and wait sometimes. That's kind of embarrassing, man. I'm not going to wait for these guys, but we have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, on crash scenes, it's like cops are secondary. Once the EMS shows up or the fire department, I don't want to get my fucking hands bloody,
right?
Whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, get out, get everybody out of the way, so these guys can get in here and take care of business. We got a couple very special guests that are joining us in the studio. I think we should get to them. I'm excited that these two human beings are here in the studio to tell a pretty awesome story. We're going to have some fun a little bit and get a little background first. And then I think they're going to blow your socks off with this amazing story. Two heroic policemen. But before we get into that, Lytle, it's been bugging me because I noticed you've been staring at my wrist the whole time you've been here today because you're admiring this watch that I have.
That watch is awesome. Tell me about it, bud.
This watch, how much would you think this watch costs if you were to buy this on the street?
$10,000.
$10,000.
That'd be my bet. If I'm a betting man, which I am.
Well, MVMTwatches.com. Movement Watches was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. I know it looks expensive, but hang on. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 1 million watches sold to customers in over 160 countries around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. I have a Movement watch, and it looks and feels awesome. And when people see me wearing it, they always ask me two things. How much did it cost, and where did I get it? If it's a girl, I say $10,000, and it was a gift from President Obama after I saved his life. But it wasn't on the media because we didn't make a big deal out of it. But if it's a dude, I say $100 at WVMTwatches.com because that's the truth, and I'm not trying to get laid. This all started with two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them. So they were like, watch this. We'll start our own watch company. And they did. Movement Watches started just $95 at a department store. You're looking at $400 to $500 easy. By selling online, they're cutting out the middleman and doing away with retail markup, providing the best possible watch at the best possible price. Classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to MVMTwatches.com/McAfee. This watch has a really clean design, and seriously, guys, I've been getting compliments ever since I put it on. Chris, I'm going to get you one of these for your birthday because I can see how much you like this watch.
August, buddy, August.
That's easily the most subtle ad read you've ever had.
It is. Not we didn't cloak that one too much. Just kind of, to be honest, we kind of forgot about it. We only have one today, too, by the way, so the listeners can relax. There's no more ad reads. That's the only one. Just do what I say. Go to MVMTwatches.com/McAfee. That's MCAFEE, and join the movement. Get a good-looking watch. Our guest today. Ryan Colley set this up. You're related.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins.
Yep.
His cousins are here. They both are veteran officers of Anderson Police Department here in Indiana. We have Marty Dalworth. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. And your brother?
Check. Joe Garrett.
Joe Garrett. Joe and Marty. Marty, how old are you?
I just turned 41 last weekend.
Just turned 41. And Joe?
I'll be 58 in September.
58. Okay. You both work for Anderson PD.
Yes.
When did you come on, Joe?
I got hired in August of 1985.
1985. And you came on when, Marty?
March of 2001.
Okay. How much overlap was there in service where you're both on the same department?
Still are.
I'm still
nice.
There. Yeah.
Okay.
I work third shift, and he's the chief's driver.
Are you a boss? You're the chief's driver? Are you saying he's a golden boy?
I'm
Shots fired early.
Because you get close to the people you work with anyway in law enforcement, and you bust each other's chops all the time, break balls, pull pranks, whatever. I can imagine being on the same agency in the same station with my brother.
Oh, it's brutal. It's brutal.
I refuse to go on a call with him. He's an idiot.
Oh, yeah?
He's been in my shadow his entire life. I joined the Marine Corps. He joined the Marine Corps. I became a policeman. He became a policeman. Christmas, mom pulled me off to the side and said, whatever you do, don't come out of the closet. Don't kill your dad.
You know, he makes those comments and he tries to be funny about it. And I did kind of follow in his footsteps, but I destroyed everything he ever did.
Broke all his old records?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
He talks that smack, but let's play a game of Twister right now.
Jeez. Oh, wow.
As soon as he says left
I
leg red,
you might want to describe.
Yeah, we might have to let the listeners in on a little thing they can't see right now. Marty, you lost your left leg.
I did.
In the line of duty.
I did.
And he's cracking on you right now because you have this prosthetic leg.
I can still beat him in a foot race.
It looks very, 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 like it's like it's made for speed.
It's a good heavy duty, well built leg.
Uh-huh.
They took good care of me, and this is the one I wear at work. I've got several others for other things, but this is the one that I use at work, heavy duty, and works pretty good.
His leg costs more than my truck.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. And the funny thing about it is, what the viewers can't see is he always wears shorts. We're in Montana in March, he's wearing shorts. We're at the police academy in January, he's wearing shorts.
they're much easier for his wife to put on. Well, in the morning.
But you got to wonder, what would he wear if he got shot in the balls? A kilt?
I mean, what's the best prank that one of you has pulled on the other?
Oh, hands down, I have the best prank. When he was 7 years old, I just got out of the Marine Corps, and he's mama's baby. Let's get that right out here right now. So mom calls me and says, hey, you need to pick your brother up from school. I'm like, well, let his fat ass ride the bus like I had to ride. She goes, no, he'll be scared. So I go to school 15 minutes early because I got something to do, and I pick him up. And just as he's walking down the hallway carrying his little knapsack or whatever he's got, it come to me. He goes, hey, what are you doing here? I go, there's been a terrible accident. Mom and dad are both at the hospital. You know, he's like, what? I go, yeah. So in the car, he's like looking out the window going. So we get home, and mom calls. He's like, hey, I'm coming home now. You know, get my car worked on. What do you guys want for dinner or whatever? I say, you know, whatever, you know. And I hang the phone up, and I go, that was the hospital. Mom and dad didn't make it. They're both dead. Oh, he started crying. It sounded like a turbine engine. I mean, he did that for like 15 minutes.
All I like sudden, how he's making him sound like a pussy.
I know. Because like, he just lost his parents. Yeah.
What a pussy.
What if he just said,
I was grooming him for later in life.
So, get used to disappointment, kid.
Yeah. The door flies open, and mom comes walking. She goes, hey, boys. Well, he runs over and almost tackles mom. She goes, what's wrong? He goes, we're dead. And he like snot bubbles. And I just fell over on the couch laughing. Mom comes over and just starts pounding on me with her fist. Marty's wrapped around her leg. Dad comes walking in and goes, what in the hell is going on? He told the baby we were dead. And Dad tried to act mad, but he looked at me kind of like, well played.
Yeah, he had a whole new appreciation, though. You taught him a whole new appreciation. He lost his parents, and they got him back.
Yeah.
They didn't know how much he loved them.
Think of the joy he had when he saw them walk through the door. Some people never get that kind of joy in life. You know? Never have that high.
I was grooming him for later in life.
Yeah. Did you get in trouble? Did you get grounded for this?
Oh, I was 20.
He was in the military. I don't think they can ground him in. Pay attention.
I was 24 years old.
I'm 26, and I can still get grounded.
Well, that's very true.
I was 24 years old, man.
Did you ever get back at him,
well,
Marty?
You know, here's the deal. That was pretty ruthless and pretty rough on somebody that young. And there were several other things that he did as I was growing up. That was pretty rough. But about the time I turned 18, he stopped because I will whoop his ass.
he thought his binky had balls on it till he was three. He can talk that smack, but he knows.
Any department related pranks? You guys ever work the same shift?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we worked several years together on thirds. I was on third shift for almost 14 years before I took my new position.
Nice.
But the good thing about it is we have different last names. So, like, when he does something stupid, I can separate myself. I don't know.
Nothing to do with me.
Yeah. I don't know that guy.
You know, we got different last names. Joe was conceived when my mom was still running around with the carnival. She settled down when she met my dad and had stability.
You know mom has Wi-Fi, right?
Yep.
I can't imagine, you guys stopped a lot of cars together and whatnot, right? Went to a lot of domestics together.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're the two people to handle it.
You have to understand, there's things that we can't.
Yeah. There's statutes.
You're both still employed.
Yeah.
By the department. I'm retired, so I can say whatever now. Yeah, all I want.
Absolutely.
Last thing I heard this morning when I was leaving was conduct unbecoming. Look at it.
Just remember that. I think they might let you go. I don't think they're going to let you go, Marty. You'd be like, I gave a leg for this department.
I just pulled my pants.
You're going to let me go for singing? but that's. I think it's cool too, though, to work with your brother. It's got to be somewhat, even though you bust each other's chops.
Oh, yeah, I love him. He's my little brother. We got a brother between us that is completely and totally polar opposite of us.
What does he do?
He's a mechanic. He just long
maintenance
hair.
Maintenance supervisor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just wanted nothing to do with
the... Did you say long hair?
Long hair.
How did he pull that out? Look at you two. He took all the hair. That's not fair.
Long hair, beard. Pats for Sam Elliott. He's got a real deep voice. He's a smoker. Real laid back. Never gets excited.
Really?
Yeah.
They wanted no part of military life or cop life, huh?
Nothing. No. Just a long cigarette, Coors Light, and a truck with mud tires.
Living the dream.
Yeah. Right.
He might have it figured out. He didn't have a care in the world, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody's trying to kill him.
Maybe, yeah.
He'll probably live to be 100, just probably. no blood pressure getting real high enough.
Yeah.
You guys have like an incredible story. And I know you travel around a little bit to help other cops, educate them, tell them your story. I just think it's fascinating. I've worked with a couple brother pairs before that were on my department. I always thought that was a fascinating thing. But on this one particular evening, you guys really got to have one another's back, right?
It was completely and totally by chance. If you listen to the story, you can't walk away from it not believing that somebody bigger than us had a hand in it, because everything that had to go wrong went wrong up until the time he got shot. And then everything that had to go right went absolutely perfect, like it was choreographed in order for him to still be alive. And it's just one of those situations where if you sit down and wrote a script about this, a movie script, it would be similar to this.
Well, walk us through, because I remember when this happened. I was a cop then. And once Ryan told me that he was cousins with you guys and we could have you on, I was like, oh, my God, yeah, I would love for every, we have a lot of listeners. I would love for every one of them to hear this story. So if you would, whoever wants to begin, just walk us through beginning to end.
Okay. It was July 26, 2012. I worked third shift, which was 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. My work days were Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We had 4 on, 3 off. I was building a pole barn out at my house, and so I had taken Wednesday off and got a bunch of work done because we were going to set the trusses on Sunday. Well, Thursday, I'm out there in the driveway getting some things tied in, and my girlfriend came out and was talking to me, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to burn another vacation day and take tonight off and try to get things finished up around here so I don't have to worry about it come the weekend. And, you know, she talked me out of it. She said, stop using your days. Let's use your days for an actual vacation. And I said, you know, you're right. So she talked me out of taking that night off, and I said, hey, you got to go before my wife gets home. So she took off. So she talked me out of it. But, you know, I went ahead and decided I was going to go on in. Well, my trash man comes every Thursday and picks my trash up. Great guy. Didn't matter what I set out, he would take it. No complaints. And he always listened to the scanner. And he would talk to me about what he heard me do the week before.
Oh, yeah? Keeping track of it?
Yeah, I was K-9-4, and he'd always tell me what he heard me do. And he had asked to
K-9-4,
ride.
K-9-4, man, you were a dog handler.
Yeah, still am.
You had a dog, still are.
Yep.
Okay.
And he'd always asked to come ride. And, you know, you're a cop. You don't like ride-alongs. Some nights you just want to go in, take your calls, and not try to perform and look like Superman to somebody riding. Because,
right.
You know, people who don't know what we do and respect us, they think that we're just flying around all over the place. And some nights we just like to just take our calls and relax a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, they think we get shot at nightly.
So
yeah,
I had been putting him off, and I decided, you know what, he's good to me. I'm gonna let him come ride for a couple hours. So I explained to him, you call me later on tonight. I was hoping that he would forget.
Mm-hmm. not a chance.
Yeah, yeah. I said, you call me later on tonight. We'll set something up. You can come ride for a few hours. I said, but then I'm gonna take my lunch. I'm gonna work out. I'm gonna do my thing and do my paperwork and be done. He said, that's perfect. So I go on in a roll call at 9 o'clock that night like normal. We're busy. It's July. As soon as roll call gets out, we start humping calls right out of the gate. So I call him and said, hey, I'm clearing up some calls. You're going to have to hang tight for a minute. Just wait for me. So we agreed to meet on the south end of town at a gas station so he could just leave his car parked there. It's closer to his house. And so the deal was I was going to pick him up around 9:30 or 10. Well, about 10:40, I come rolling up, and he's still standing on the curb next to the gas station holding two big 44-ounce drinks.
He's ready.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long
super
night.
Super excited.
Yeah.
Just so, ready.
2 hours my ass.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
He's in for all night.
Mountain Dew and Red Bull.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, a guy that's been standing there for God knows how long, I'm sure he showed up early, still holding my drink that he got me.
Here's the question. How long do you think he would have stood there? What, till 6 the next morning?
Probably. 4 o'clock when he had to get in his trash truck.
If you knew him, he's determined. He's going to ride.
Sure.
You know, this is like Cops Live, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And so he jumps in, and I give him the same spiel that I give anybody. If things go south, at no time do you get out of this car unless it's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I got you. Little did I know, 15 minutes later, I was going to be getting shot all to pieces next to the car and him sitting there.
Doing what you said.
Yeah.
Knocking out of the car.
Stayed in the car. So I...
Sipping on his 44 ounce.
He probably took some of mine.
Oh, big gulps, huh? Cool.
Yeah. So we start, pick him up, we start rolling out, and I just happened to be heading west on 53rd Street when it came over the radio that there were shots fired in the town south of us, and we were directed to head that way. I'm close. You know, it's probably 5 miles from where I'm at, tops.
Mm-hmm.
So I hammer down, start heading that way, and I got Kilo in the back. That was my partner at the time.
Good 80, name.
85 pounds of beast.
Nice.
Yeah, he's a Mal. Great dual-purpose dog.
You named him Kilo?
His name was already Kilo.
So you named him after a drug? After drugs?
That's
a drug
what
term?
They, that's Love what they that. Came over. Yeah.
That's badass.
But was it a multi-purpose dog, or was it just an ass eater?
Dual-purpose.
Okay.
Vicodin was already taken, so they had him.
Go back. The dog was an ass eater? What?
Yeah, that's what I don't know. That's what we call him. The one, just a bite dog.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Or he could also find dope.
Yes.
Drugs.
He could find drugs and people.
Oh, okay. Good.
It was mad. That's what we call him sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can find drugs and
ass
people.
Ass eater.
Yep.
Ass eater.
Ass eater. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
But Malamoth, they can really freaking lay into you.
Yeah.
That's French for mentally disturbed.
Yeah. They're psychotic, I think.
But it. He was the dog that you wanted to get out on a crazy scene.
For sure.
He was the dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're heading south to where we needed to go, to the town next to us. And, you know, it came over our radios that there was an officer that had been shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that kind of steps things up a little bit.
Sure.
If you're in law enforcement long enough and you hear that come over the radio, you don't want anybody getting shot. Your adrenaline starts dumping. But then you know this guy.
Changes things. Yeah. You feel different very quickly.
Because you know it.
Everybody's adrenaline goes up a little bit. You try and hone in a little bit. Yeah,
and they told us the crossroads where it was taking place. And I knew where the main road was that cuts into this area where they're talking. And so I made it a point to get to that main road, and I'll just start heading west until I find somebody standing outside or run into other cop cars. And I can look in my rear view, and there's other Anderson guys coming. So I know I got backup coming, so we're good. And I cut down that main road, and sure enough, I get to an intersection. I see people standing outside, and I go ahead and I get out, and I said, hey, you know, you guys hear some shots, some things going on. Have you seen the other police officers? And they point down the alley. And, you know, I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but I'm scared shitless of the dark.
I don't.
I carry.
Joe says, I don't.
You know, when I was growing up, he scared me so much.
I know why you're scared of the dark.
It's because he's your brother.
Probably due to his parents being dead. It all goes back to that, I bet.
And then sixth grade, he jumps out of the shower with a mask on and a knife and about cuts my finger off.
Jesus.
Stay focused here.
I told you this would be good.
I'm afraid of the dark, too. My mom used to lock me in the bathroom, and then she'd do the Wicked Witch impression. Terrified of the dark.
Oh my god,
this is why I'm so fucked up. All right, continue. Sorry.
So they
it's very dark this alley.
Yeah Okay. That's why I carry two flashlights. But the alley they point down, it's the darkest alley I've ever seen.
Okay.
And they say, well, the shots are coming from that way. Of course they are.
Yeah
So
gonna have to go through that
fatal funnel.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my backup's there, and here's my deal. I've had people ask me, why would you get your dog out when there's shots being fired? Here's why. That's my partner. I would rather have my dog and not need him than need him and not have him. Sure. He's no good to me 500 feet away in that car.
Yeah.
So I get my dog out. If I don't need him, great. If I do, stand by. So I got Kilo out, and I kept him on a 6-footer because my intention was, we're going to find this officer that's been shot, get him to safety, and then we're going to find this guy that's doing this damage and fix it.
Sure.
And
that's a longer leash than usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's 6 foot.
Shorter, I mean, so you can keep more.
I want to be able to keep him. You know, we turn a corner and there's an officer laying there. I want to be able to keep him close to me.
Yeah.
Ass eater.
Yeah.
Does the dog recognize an officer in uniform and know that that's.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I've almost been bit several times.
That dog would have killed me if it ever got
All he cares about is you,
daddy,
the handler.
Okay.
That's all he cares about.
But here's one, when you're doing a building search and you're my backup and you're beside me, 9 times out of 10, the dog will work in between us.
Mm-hmm.
But if they start giving you that crazy eye, go ahead and back out.
Yeah.
You got to be careful. The handler has to watch it. They got to watch their dog. So I got my backup. I got 3 guys with me from Anderson. We're going to go down this alley, and we're going to find the officer. You know, we're going to find him. As I start down the alley, a lady that lives on the corner come out and she said, my garage door's open. It's never open. Somebody's in there. First thought, hey, the cop's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Second thought, maybe the bad guy's in there.
Right.
So I reach down and grab the gate, and it's got a padlock on it. And she said, we lost the key a long time ago. Well, guess where I got to go?
Yeah.
Down that alley to get to the back of the garage. So I start down the alley with my backup. They're right there with me. We're good. As I get close to the end of this garage, which is probably 25 feet into the alley, she comes to the end of the alley and she says, right there's the garage. And I turned and I said, we got it. Go back in the house. But as I turned, I heard the worst noise in the world that nobody wants to hear. It was somebody behind me just opening up rounds. And it didn't sound like a handgun. It sounded like a big gun. And the next thing I remember, it felt like somebody had taken a baseball bat and knocked my legs out from under me. And I'm laying on my back. Things have slowed way down. I remember how bright the sky was. I remember the stars. I remember the taste of gunpowder in my mouth. And I remember looking to the left, and I could see a silhouette and just fire coming out of the end of a gun. One round after another. One round after another. And I thought, okay. I've been shot, I think. And then Kilo jumped back on top of me, but he's still facing to my left, barking. And the bark sounded weird. There was something not right with it, and I didn't understand it at the time, but it makes sense later. So I realized that I need to get up, but something didn't feel right. And I remember looking down, and my left foot wasn't facing the way it should. And I thought, okay. So I start crawling backwards, and I remember watching this guy follow me with the end of his weapon and just keep firing one round after another as I'm crawling backwards. And then I felt this horrible pain in my right leg, and I thought, okay, this is legit. He's shooting me.
Mm.
He's going to chew me up right here in this alley. And, you know, you play this over in your mind over and over. If I'm in a gun battle, I'm going to return fire, blah, blah, blah. Here's the deal. When it happens, things change.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew if I could see his muzzle flash, if I returned fire and stopped crawling out, he would see mine. And his gun's a lot bigger than mine. But I had backup. And this story took several minutes to tell, but it happened in seconds.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And my backup had his AR started returning fire. And I'm still crawling underneath all of it. And as I got to the end of the alley, somebody reached down to grab a hold of me to help me out. And I remember Kilo going after one of the officers. And I yelled for him to come back to me. Over and over. The dog's never not listened. He's always came back to me. But today he wasn't. He didn't even budge. Didn't even slow down stride. And he latched onto that officer.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, okay, this just got real bad. I can't get up. Somebody's shooting at me. And now my dog's on one of my fellow officers. And he won't come back. And I remember looking at my partner that was returning fire. And I had to make the toughest decision I've ever had to make in my life. And I had to tell him to shoot my dog. And I remember just looking at me for a second, and I'm like, you got to shoot him. And he did. And so I watched my dog fall over dead at the end of this alley. And that was on me. I thought that was all my fault.
But you knew that dog was not going to stop because it knew you were hurt.
Yes.
And nobody was going to get near you.
And I later learned that he took the first AK-47 round through the chest.
And then was still going on.
Still going.
I was informed it was a fatal wound. He was just still fighting.
Jesus.
But I didn't learn that for a couple of weeks.
Really?
So I lived with the fact that I had to tell somebody to put my dog down because he wouldn't come back to me.
Wow.
But when I finally found out that he had received a fatal wound, it made sense why his bark sounded weird, why he wasn't listening. He was in fight mode.
Yeah.
He was protecting Dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if it wasn't for that dog, I'd be dead.
The guy took that round.
The guy was so worried about that dog. Mm. That's why I'm hit low. Mm. His main concern was that dog. He turned his attention to me soon after wanted to chew me up, but that first few rounds was he wanted to get that dog away from him.
Dogs are amazing. A cat would never do that. A dog, for sure.
No way.
There's a lot of humans that wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
There's no better partner
in
that situation.
Absolutely.
But,
So I'm dealing with all that drama. And I remember getting behind a car, and now I look down. And, you know, if you've ever seen blood, you know the difference between blood and arterial blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking down and I could see this real thick red blood just forming under my left leg, coming out in a puddle. And I thought, okay, this isn't good.
Not the good kind.
No, right. No. So training kicks in. I'm going to put my tourniquet on. So I reach down to my cargo pocket. Guess where my tourniquet is? In my SWAT vest, which is in the SWAT locker at the police department. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and tell them to throw me a first aid kit out of one of the cars. So one of the guys tossed a first aid kit. No tourniquet.
Has the shooting stopped?
Yes, the shooting had just stopped. I mean, this all happened in seconds, but now nobody's shooting at us at this point in time. The other backup guys have their guns down range, trying to locate the target, and I'm behind the car. All I've got in this first aid kit's a H bandage or a pressure bandage, and it's got the four little thin strings that come off each end.
Sure.
So I remember twisting two of them together. I wasn't real sure where I was hit. I just know it was below the knee. So I wrapped what I thought was going to be an okay tourniquet right above my calf, and I started squeezing, and I got it just tight enough where that puddle underneath me had kind of slowed down, and then it broke. Mm-hmm. I've got two more strings. So I reach over, grab it, twist them together, wrap it around, and I'm starting to get lightheaded. I'm freezing, but I'm sweating all over the place, and I kind of started going in and out. And one of the times I woke up, I woke up and I started to pull it tight, and it broke. Okay. Now we're getting jammed up. My options are getting thin. I remember calling for an ambulance or letting them know I needed a medic. I could see the medic down the road, but it's a hot zone. It's a hot zone.
They're not going to come in.
Right. Yeah. I get it. But when you're laying there bleeding out, you don't get it.
Right. Yeah.
So I remember, okay, I got to find the hole and shove my finger in it. If I can find that hole, I'll shove my finger in it. That'll help things a little bit. And I remember sliding my hand down up and down my calf, and I'm just covered in blood, and it's not there. And I went down the backside of my boot, and that's when I realized that's not a hole. It had destroyed everything. And your femoral artery splits at your knee, and it blew them out. Just blow.
So you need a tourniquet. That's the only
thing. And you need a high up.
I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm dying. It was at that point in time, I went ahead and thought, I'm going to make this right with God. And I laid my head back on the sidewalk, and I remember looking up at the street sign, and I thought, I'm going to die right here. And, you know, you think of all these things that might be running through your mind, but the only thing that was crossing my mind, couldn't remember if I'd kissed my kids before I went to work and told them I loved them. And I remember praying to God, and I just wanted him to let them know how much I loved them. That's it. And I shut my eyes and I went ahead and accepted the fact I was going to go ahead and die. And then I heard this god awful noise coming from behind me. It sounded like a tank. And I remember being upside down, opening my eyes, and I could see these headlights coming across the field at me. And I thought, dude, this guy has gotten in his truck. He's going to come run over me. He's not done. He's coming to kill me. Here he comes. And there's nothing I could do. And these headlights come sliding right up pretty close to me. And the dude jumped out of the passenger seat. And I remember being upside down. I started at his feet. And whoever it was had them old-ass Jerusalem Cruiser sandals. You know, the leather ones.
Built for comfort.
Blue jean shorts that were way too big. And a tie-dyed shirt. And I thought, this is the ugliest angel I've ever seen. And it was Joe. And wow. I thought, he's off on Thursday nights. What is he doing it?
That was your first thought?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
You remember his schedule.
He said Thursday, Friday, Saturday off for years.
Right.
That was the only piece I got at work.
That was my first thought. What the hell am I doing?
What am I doing?
That's a good schedule, by the way, off Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Are you a Grateful Dead fan? Is that whose outfit came from?
No, I got that shirt out of the trash, actually. It was actually his shirt. He threw it away, and I dug it out of the trash and wore it just because it was an old, nasty shirt.
So did you overhear this on a scanner? Did you have your radio on in your car? Or somebody call you?
Well, let him finish, and I'll tell you what. Yeah.
So then I realized I don't care how he found out or why he's here. And, you know, I give him a hard time all the time. I can't stand him, and I'll punch him right in the mouth if I get the chance.
Mm-hmm.
But when things go south.
Twister.
When things go south, I want him there.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's been in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's been there, done that. And I know he's going to do what he can to make it right. And I remember him walking up to me, and I said, Joe, I've been shot. And he goes, yeah. And I said, it's bad. He goes, where's it at? And I said, somewhere on my left side. And he took his belt off, wrapped it around, got it nice and tight. And I remember, man, that hurts worse than being shot. That's rough. And I remember him grabbing me, and somebody else grabbed me, and they were going to throw me in the back of his truck, his personal truck, and get me out of there. And I don't know why it crossed my mind, but what have we all forgotten about?
Yeah, the shooter.
Shooter's still out there.
How about the trash man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How about the trash man sitting in my car?
He's so, like, worst ride along ever. Yeah.
So
he still got his Cokes. He's just sitting.
Yeah. So out of all this that's going on, I remember the trash man. And I said, Joe, the trash man's in my car. And I remember him setting me back down on my butt and looking at me like, what is wrong with you? I said, Joe, trash man's in my car. And then you can hear how he ran into it. He just let me go, and he went and made contact with the trash man. But anyway, they all come back. They throw me up in the back of the truck, and I can't hold this tourniquet. I'm passing in and out, bleeding all over the place. And I remember Joe giving Larry, which is the trash man, specific instructions. Whatever you do, do not let go of this tourniquet. You make sure you hold it. So I'm laying on my right side, so my left leg will stay up. Tourniquet's on nice and tight, and Larry is holding it, the trash man. And Joe takes off the same way he came in, which was through a backyard, through a fence, bird feeder field. It was a rough ride.
I don't know the city we were in.
Let's go back the way it came. What else, what else can you do?
Follow those tracks.
Apple Maps.
So I remember my head just bouncing off the back of the truck as he's hitting all these bumps. And I thought, God, man, what's going on? It's going to be terrible.
I'm going to get brain damage on top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
More brain damage.
And you remember Larry's holding the tourniquet.
Sure.
Let me describe Larry. Larry's probably 5'6", and well over 3.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
You should have told me that at the beginning.
He's a big boy.
A big boy. He's one of the guys that when you throw a couch out for the trash, he throws it in himself.
Silverback gorilla hands.
Yeah. And I remember feeling something come along the right side of my face, big fat fingers, and they were touching my mouth, my nose. Well, it was him. He was spooning me, holding my tourniquet, and his big old hand was now caressing my head to keep it from hitting. That is the most comfortable feel. I often think about it. It is the most comfortable feeling I've ever had, a 400 pounder spooning me,
yeah,
caressing me, and saving my life.
Yeah.
And it was enjoyable.
Vibs knows what that's like.
Minus the saving my life part. Yes, I do.
So, it was legit.
Poor
it was
kid. Legit.
So he drives out and hits the main drag.
Sure.
And there's an ambulance waiting from Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And he can tell you that portion of it. So I remember him sliding me out of the back of the truck and putting me on the gurney. And then I remember him coming up and just smacking the shit out of me, right in my face. And I opened my eyes. He goes, listen, Mom will kill me. You hang in there. And then he took my gun, my sidearm. And I remember seeing the taillights heading back toward the other town, back to where the gun battle was.
Now, when he says I hit him, I didn't slap him like, hey, little bubby, stay in there. It was like, I'm Rick James, bitch. Because I was afraid he was going to pass out and they weren't going to keep him awake.
Yeah, I'm going to make an assumption. When you grabbed your brother's gun and you left with it, it wasn't because you didn't want him to have to mess with the gun at the hospital. You needed an extra gun.
I went back.
You had business to do.
I went back to Pendleton on a search and destroy mission.
Sure.
The Marine kicked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were going to use his weapon.
He had a small little backup.
I had a 22. I figured,
you need a big gun.
I need a bigger gun.
Yeah.
So I remember getting on this ambulance, and man, when they hit me with that first dose of morphine, I remember being like, okay, I can enjoy this ride. Go ahead. It wasn't so much. And, you know, people talk about when you get shot, your adrenaline kicks in, it doesn't hurt. It's a lie.
It all hurt.
Absolutely. It felt like somebody laid me in a bonfire from my waist down.
Mm, damn.
And, So they hit me with that first shot of morphine. And I remember looking down and there was a new fireman, I didn't know him, tugging on my boot, trying to take it off. And I remember thinking, dude, you got to stop. So I told him, I said, listen, let go. You're going to pull my foot off. Stop tugging on it. And I remember blood come shooting out all over the back, and he stopped. And I remember getting to the hospital, and they wheeled me into the trauma room. Look, we're at them hospitals all the time taking people in there. Mm-hmm. You know when something's in the trauma room, it's not good. Right. And that's the first room they wheeled me into. And I thought, oh, this, I'm not out of the woods yet. And so they, all these nurses, doctors, they start cutting my clothes off. And, you know, I see those people in there all the time. I'm always in there. And as they're cutting my clothes off, this thought came to my mind. These nurses are getting ready to see that I'm a liar when they get these clothes cut off. So there was a nurse that had been around for a while up at my face, wiping the blood off my face with a washcloth and talking to me, being sweet. And I remember looking up at her and I said, hey, they're getting ready to cut my underwear off. And all these ladies in here are going to see what I'm working with. Can you help me out? And she laughed and she took that same little bitty washcloth that she had.
Folded in half.
She slid it. It was very nice of her. She slid it right on down. She covered me up, little pat, and pulled away. You know, it was covered. And I felt relief because of that. And then as they cut one of my boot off, I heard something fall and hit the floor. And I heard one of the nurses say, that's a bullet. So the bullet that had went in my left leg had fallen onto the floor. And I'd forgotten that I was shot in the right leg. But I had done so good at not looking down. I don't want to see it. I don't want to add any more stress to it. But then the doctor said, is that another bullet hole? And what do you think I did? I looked. Sure did. I sit right up and looked. I had forgotten about being shot in the right leg. And so I look over and, yep, there's a hole in the right leg. And, yep, the left foot looks just as bad as it felt like it looked. Mm. And I laid back and I heard the doctor tell him to fly me out. I knew that if he's going to fly me out, they're going to get me stable enough to fly me out. So that was a good feeling. Bad feeling is they're flying me out. Right. This isn't good. And I remember the helicopter taking off and I remember it banking real hard to the left and I could see all the lights over that neighboring community where all the police were showing up. And then they landed in Indy. And then they had to throw me on another ambulance and drive me up closer to the hospital. And as they're wheeling me in, I have no idea how these people found out, but it was like a big line of officers standing from all different agencies, standing out. And the ones that could reach out and touch me did, and they kept telling me to hang in there. It was a lot of support. It was good.
Wow.
They wheeled me into another bright room. And I remember that there was a nurse that was like right on my left side, and she seemed like she was there forever. And finally, I looked over and said, hey, is everything okay? And she said, I'm just holding your artery. Everything's fine. And I said, well, continue.
Yeah. There we go. Good
work. Don't let me distract you.
Yeah.
I'll be here all day.
Yeah. And, you know, they were able to get my family down there to come in and see me before they wheeled me off to surgery. And from that point in time, it's a big blur, you know, surgery after surgery. And they made every attempt they could to save my leg. But the only thing that was left was a portion of my ankle and my toes. Everything else was blown out.
Mm.
And they were only able to mend or fix one of the arteries that runs down the front of my foot. And then they cut my stomach muscles out of my right side and built a whole new foot with that. And so for 7 months, I tried working with that. And I went through hours and hours and hours of therapy. I never thought I would return to police work. But once I realized that, look, I'm making this work, do it. They sent me through a physical fitness test to prove that I could be a cop, and I passed it. But little did I know, during this test, I tore the ligaments and tendons that they had reattached.
Mm.
So my foot was just flopping back and forth when I didn't have a boot on it. And so I went back to full duty, and it got to the point where I didn't even want to get out of my car because it hurt so bad to take a step. And my only other option at this point in time is amputation. My only interaction with amputees were the ones who had given up on life a long time ago. And I thought my family's going to have to take care of a cripple you know, this is where I'm stuck. This is where I'm at. And I reached out to one of our local prosthetic companies. Can we say their names on here?
Sure. I wish you would.
Okay. SRT Prosthetics. Same as the owner. I reached out to them, told them what had taken place, and the owner came in and made it a point to get me all fixed up. But he sent a representative to my house named Ashton Wallace. He come walking up to my house with pants on, and I thought, man, they're sending a guy up here that went to college to tell me about how life's going to be as an amputee, until 10 minutes into our conversation when he pulled his pant leg up and he was also an amputee.
Oh, wow.
And it was at that point in time I realized, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I made the decision to have an amputation. And it took them 45 minutes to cut off my leg after I'd already had 20-plus hours of surgery. Mm. And I wish I could tell you heroic stories, but I can't. Because when I woke up and looked down and noticed that for 37 years of my life, I'd had two legs and now one's gone. I went to a dark place, man. Dark. And felt sorry for myself. And this went on for about 2 weeks. And one morning, I woke up and I thought, here's the deal. If you give up and your children see this, everything that they do in life and it gets a little tough, they're going to give up. And guess what? You're to blame. From that day forward, I strapped my boots on tight and marched on. I never gave up because my kids will never blame me for giving up on something. They're not. And 3 months and 6 days after my amputation, I returned to full duty with no restrictions. And I'm a canine handler again.
That's incredible.
Wow, that's unbelievable how fast. 3 months. I know people who on the fire department have, you know, a meniscus tear in their arm for 3 months. You got your whole leg amputated, and you were back in 3 months. That's pretty impressive.
What he forgot to tell you is his new dog is a wiener dog, so they don't do a whole lot.
He does tricks and stuff. He entertains the kids, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Dog that finds wieners or a wiener dog?
Joe finds wieners, my dog.
It's a mellow
my dog
one,
just
yeah.
confirms
it's
a wiener.
Hates me as bad as the other
dog
one.
Just confirms it's a wiener.
My dog now is a German Shepherd, and like all my other dogs, absolutely hates Joe. And so... once I retire Rico, which is my new dog, I can reassure you that I will let him out of the kennel when Joe's at the house, and he'll get dog bit, and there's nothing he can do about it.
Nice.
That dog's going to make a pretty throw rug.
Well, Joe, how were you contacted initially to let you know your brother was in trouble?
I was working my security job at local hospital, St. Vincent's, and I worked security there, and my routine has always been, as soon as I walk out the door and I hit my key fob, I reach around and turn my radio off.
Mm-hmm. Is that the uniform for security there, the tie-dye shirt and sandals?
No.
You changed.
I wish. Okay. If I was in charge, it would be. But it was July, so I had a fountain drink. So me being lazy, when I unlocked the door, I just opened the door, jumped in, was holding my fountain drink. And normally, I turn my radio off, because I've been a policeman at that point in time for 27 years. I was over it, you know. Yeah. I let the rookies
handle it. Fuck that radio.
Yeah. You know, it don't concern me.
Right.
But I drove from the hospital to the police department where I changed, because I got an older house, and I've got a wife, five kids, and a one-bathroom house. So I always change on station so I can be left alone, you know, stuff like that. So nobody came on the radio. Nobody asked for, you know, a license check, a case information, anything like that, because if they would, I would have reached around and turned my radio off because, you know, I'm over it. So at the minute I pulled up to the police department and opened my door and stepped out over the radio, is there an officer been shot in Pendleton? I'm like, okay, you have my attention. So I still, by habit, just took my radio off and threw it in the truck, walked in. It took me about probably 25, 30 seconds to get from my truck into the locker room. We have an intercom system, and I'm listening to, you know, a couple of people en route, whatnot. So I change out of my uniform into my battle gear. I didn't get restoot from Newton. On my way back to the truck, I get back in my truck, and I'm at a crossroads. I'm like, do I really want to go to Pendleton? You know, I'm wearing a tie-dye shirt, Jesus sandals, and right. I got a .22 Beretta pistol. You know, I thought, well, heck with it. I'll just go down there and maybe just, if nothing else, be an extra set of eyes. And I missed the point where Marty, you know, said he would be en route. So I get, I don't know, 22nd MOK, which is – MLK runs right into Pendleton, and he comes over the air, K-9-4, I'm shot. Well, before that, you hear shots fired, officer down, just it's havoc. It's complete and total havoc. And if you've been around an officer in trouble when they get on the radio, they never say, "Hey, I'm in trouble." They right. scream like a 10-year-old girl at a, you know, One Direction concert. That's what it sounded like. And through all that madness, I hear Marty's voice real plain saying, "K9-4, I'm shot." And I was like, I went to a different
call
place. Yeah, it's like, so I get on the air and I said, 207, that's my number. And I go, "Did K9-4 just say he was shot?" Affirmative. And I said, "Well, I'm en route, you know."
Yeah.
And I was behind two or three cars, and I was at a place where I couldn't get out around them, and it's a red light. And all of a sudden, this police car goes flying through the intersection, red lights and siren, going probably 90 miles an hour. Well, That was my arm. So I finally get through the traffic. I follow this police car, and it was so funny. Like he's talking about, the adrenaline kicks in.
Uh-huh.
When I caught up to him, I was so close to him, I couldn't see his license plates. That's how close to him I was. He never knew I was behind him, because I saw him a couple of days later and thanked him. He goes, "I don't know, Evan, what you're talking about. There was nobody behind me." But last time I looked at my speedometer, I was going 115 miles an hour. I mean, my butt wasn't even on the seat because I'm standing on a gas pedal.
Right.
And the city we were in, I didn't know anything about it. Had it not been, I think the shots fired, when he said I'm hit, I think it was like 11:09 or something like that, 23:09. And had it not been dark, I'd have never found him, because when I top the hill, I see all these lights off to the right. So I know that's where I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
This guy goes straight. So I hang a hard right, and there's a guy there. He's a reserve or a, I don't know what they call him.
EMA.
EMA. And he had already started setting up a perimeter. He's standing in the middle of the street holding up, you know, his badge and his radio. And I'm like, "Get the F out of my way."
What's an EMA?
Like the emergency management guys.
Oh, okay.
Will help with traffic assistance.
Sure, he just happened to be on his way home from wherever and heard that. So he's like setting up a perimeter about half mile away. So he gets out of the way, and I'm standing on the throttle again. And as I'm going down, I'm watching, and I was going so fast, I missed the first turn to get to where they're at. And now the lights are kind of starting, like they're getting behind me. So I did what anybody would do. I just did a hard left and went through some yards, over a curb, some field. And the loud roar he heard was I actually knocked the exhaust off my truck.
Mm.
My check engine light came on, my fuel gauge quit working, and my ABS light came on, and my muffler came off. And he is yet to pay for any of that stuff. I come skidding out, and he's right there. And I jump out, and there's still gun smoke in the air. It's still, you know, you can still smell the sulfur and stuff. I look over, and the first thing I see is a dog, and I walk up here. I go, "Hey." He goes, "I've been shot." And I'm like, "Yeah, I heard. That's why I'm here, you know." And he'd called for an ambulance four times, and for four times they were denied.
Let's just say.
You know, we were just talking about that earlier. Me being a firefighter, we go on runs sometimes. We get told not to go in, and that bothers me. I'm like, you know, if I want to go up there and take care of this, you should let me. That's why I'm here, really.
Well, what if they get in there and they get, well, you know, what?
What if everybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If everybody had perfect childhood and great parents, we wouldn't have strippers, you know?
and that'd be a huge problem.
I know, it's all relevant,
but
right?
You couldn't get medical attention to you because of the gunfire that was happening.
It was a hot zone.
Yeah, it was a hot zone. It wasn't too hot for a 2006 Chevy truck. And the guy wearing it anyway.
Well, you were like, "Fuck it."
Yeah,
I'm going
pretty
in
much.
There.
Well, it's my baby brother. If anything would happen to him, me and Dad would have to put Mom down because he's the baby. It'd be
sure.
like,
yeah.
"Sorry, Mom, drink this." So I jump out and I see the dog. I go, "Hey, the dog." He goes, "Yeah, no, I hadn't put him down." So now, you know, there was another officer had arrived. So now there's five people there. Well, you had the guy chewed up by the dog. You had Marty, and I'm like, "Hey, I can't take anybody away from here. You know, you got a guy out there with a gun. I can't leave you guys here. I need help." And then Larry, Trash Man, I called him Trash Man for 2 weeks because I never thought to ask his name. I saw him every day for 2 weeks because he was either at the hospital or Marty's house. But he came running up. He goes, "What do you need me to do?" And I looked over at him. I'm like, "Who the F are you?" And it hurt his feelings. He's like, "Well, I'm your Trash Man." I'm like, "Why is my Trash Man in a gunfight?" And, you know, this, you know, he goes, Marty goes, "It's okay. He's my ride along," and he passes out. So I'm like, "What?" Yeah. So I said, "Okay, Larry, jump up in the truck." We put his leg over his shoulder, and I said, "Here, you pull this tight and don't let go." And Larry, you know, like I said, big, strong, he pulled it probably even a half and a quarter inch tighter. And I said, "I only know one way out of here, you know, so just hang on. It's going to be a ride." So I went out the way I came, and it's pretty rough. And I get on the road, and I didn't know it, but the guy that got ate by the dog, or I forgot it, they put him in my back seat. And so he's like laying down in the back seat. So on the way out, I'm like praying, you know, like that heartfelt prayer, like, you know, hey, I'll never ask for anything again.
Right.
No more porn. Well, not as much porn, but, you know, I'm making that prayer. And right. I hear this voice say, I'm really sorry, Joe. Now, if you're praying and you hear a voice that says, I'm really sorry, Joe. I mean, for a second there, my heart was like, you know, just wait a minute. Don't rush the judge here. Let's negotiate some more.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
The guy in the back seat raises up, and I was like, oh, my God. You sound, you know.
You sound like God.
Yeah. Jesus, you sound a lot like Sean Williams. So that was the guy's name. So he goes, I think I'm shot. And I'm like, well, now's a hell of a time to tell me. You know, you should have told me that 2 or 3 minutes ago. And I said, just find a hole and put your finger in it, and we'll be somewhere quick.
Is this Sean Williams from Pendleton? About my age?
No.
Oh, okay. He is a cop, though. I don't know if he was
a cop in Fishers?
Yeah.
I think
where he's at now.
I think so.
Yeah, that's probably him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I graduated with him.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he played baseball.
He was shot.
Yeah, great baseball player.
He tangled with the dog and just now realized that he's been shot?
He wasn't shot. He thought he was shot.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a lot of blood because the dog chewed him up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So, and the cool thing about the story is there was a couple of firemen that were listening to this on the scanner, and you know, they had 20-plus years on. I mean, they were older, and they're like, hey, we got a boy down in Pendleton. They're not going to get him. Let's go get him. So they went down and, like, basically stole the ambulance because they knew that one of those were paramedics or EMTs. And the young guy he's talking about is like, hey, you can't take my ambulance. And they're like, what?
Watch me.
Either you get in or get out of the way. So they met me about 2 miles out of Pendleton. So from the time he was shot to the time he was in the back of the ambulance was 9 minutes for me driving from 22nd and MOK all the way into Pendleton, picking him up, putting the tourniquet on, and driving out was 9 minutes. It, like he said, it takes longer to tell the story than it actually happened. But I took his gun. I slapped him, and I said, not today. And the not today comes, and we got some shirts here we're going to give you guys. When I was in Iraq, I was in a little town called Fallujah, and we had a
not a fun place.
Not a fun place.
No.
You were in Iraq, right?
Yeah, not Fallujah, though.
No, not Fallujah. So you guys probably had a pool and like...
Yeah, we had...
Chilies.
Yeah, we had barbecue cooks for
drive
us every day.
Number 3 with a diet.
Yeah, yeah. Movie theater. Yeah.
So I went... We had like 13 Marines killed November, December, and we had a memorial service. And I actually went to the Camp Fallujah for the memorial service, and I went into a porta potty to gather myself, you know, because I was done. You know, I was 46 years old. Why am I here? What's going on? All these young kids dying for what? And if you've never been on a military installation or been in a porta potty on a military installation, you are really missing out because there's some of the greatest philosophers in the world.
Yeah.
Are 19, 20-year-old kids with Sharpies.
Leaving their mark.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I walk in. The first thing I saw was a Kilo Company First Sergeant loves the D. You know, that's the first thing I saw. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then the next thing I saw was Born to Die, ... Just Not Today. You know, and that had a profound effect on me. I'm like, you know, how can a 20-year-old kid have this figured out and me struggle with it? And I'm like, you know, that's how I'm going to live my life from this day forward. You know, if today's the day, come get me. I'm not going to give it to you. You're going to have to earn it. So that's where that came from. So when I smacked Marty and I said, not today, you know, mom will kill me. You're not going to die today. And that's basically where that came from. But as the truck was standing there, Larry looked at me and he goes, what are we going to do now? And I go, well, I'm going to go back to Pendleton and find this guy. And Larry goes, let's go. And Larry runs and jumps in the truck.
The trash guy.
Yeah, I don't know where you're from, but we got some badass garbage down our way. Yeah. Well, Middletown.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So he jumps in the truck and we go back. So I go back down in there. And once I get there, there's like 2 or 3 more guys arrived. And so I'm like taking charge of the scene because I'm the senior officer. The sergeant had pulled Matt Guthrie, who was actually stepped up and shot the dog and covered Marty, allowed him to escape, had taken him out so he could start debriefing people because he's really the only one that had any clue what was going on down there. And I just remember Matt gave me his rifle and we stood there. I was in there for probably about 4 hours before they finally talked me into coming out. They sent a couple guys to come and get me, and I just basically refused to come out because it was personal. You know, you tried to take my little brother from me, but it was – and so finally I forgot to tell you, when I went back in there, every red light and every siren was still on. It was pure pandemonium. You couldn't hear anything. So I'm going around shutting off lights and sirens and stuff like that. And then I get to this one car, and this guy jumps up in the back seat. And he goes, get me out of here, you know, and like scared the crap out of me. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? Where are all these civilians in the middle of this gunfight? So I get him out, and I say, hey, my truck's parked over there. Larry's in my truck. Trash man's in my truck. Just tell him who you are. Get in my truck. And you guys sit there, don't get out, don't move. So 4.5, 5 hours later, when I come walking out to my truck, the windows are completely and totally fogged up. You can't. And my first thought was, great, these guys have had a near-death experience. They've come to love each other. Now they're consummated. I'll never get that smell out of my truck. All right. So I go over and knock on the window, and the window rolls down about a quarter minutes. Who is it? It's Joe, man. Open the damn window. So they roll the window down. They go, hey, you mind if we pee? I'm like, no, go ahead. They pee like horses, man. They'd been sitting in that truck the whole time. They hadn't done anything. So anyway, mom had somehow got a hold of a phone number and called the chief. The first two times they come and got me, and I'm like, no, I'm not coming out here, you know, whatever. And mom called. He pulled a mom card. You tell him I want him at the hospital right now with, you know, his family. So they pulled the mom card. So I basically walked out and went to the hospital to hang out with Marty. But that's basically my end of it. He talks more about the warrior mindset and survival. I talk about the effect it has. And here's something that law enforcement guys need to keep in mind when something like this happens. His son and daughter found out about him getting shot on Facebook.
Oh, wow. 10 minutes after the shooting.
Yeah.
Different world now.
Well, wow. Somebody was on their way through, and they stopped them, and they say, hey, I just live right down there by Shenandoah High School, you know, because that's where we went to school. And the guy goes, oh, you know Marty Dolworth, right? Yeah, I went to school with him. Oh, he just got shot. You know, and the officers trying to be, you know, helpful, but that's stuff you got to think
about. And somebody
put
it on Facebook, right?
Oh, yeah. Marty Dolworth just been shot.
This is why Facebook needs a dislike button.
Yeah.
You start that movement.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And the guy... The shooter.
Yeah, so can you tell us what happened? How did this resolve itself? Or?
Here's what all started. He was 58 years old. His wife of several years met a new man at her work and left him, served him with a protective order, and he spent that day loading up 200 rounds for his AK-47.
Jesus.
A bunch of ammo for his 9mm. He had a flak jacket, night vision goggles, and a gas mask, and he decided he was going to go ahead and kill her and him and anybody that got in the way. He arrived shortly before she got off work, waited for her, confronted her on the sidewalk, all strapped up in his battle gear, ready to go. A neighbor was driving by, was close to getting home, and he stepped off the sidewalk and said, let me show you how serious I am, and shot and killed that neighbor.
Mm.
Then he turned his attention to her. She took off running down that dark alley.
Mm-hmm.
His gun jammed, he reloaded, fired numerous more rounds at her. Two officers from that town arrive. He starts lighting the car up with rounds. One of the rounds hits the officer across the top of the leg. They had made it out of the scene. It was just never relayed back to us. We had no knowledge that he was out of the scene. So that downed officer had made it to safety.
Mm.
We just didn't know it.
He fired 78 rounds from the AK.
Really?
From start to finish, 70 years.
Was that a Pendleton officer?
Yes.
Shot?
Yes.
If you would have known that guy had already got out of the scene, would that have made you not kind of go in yet until you had more backup? Or would that have changed things for you?
Great question. No. We got a guy shooting. We got people calling the police. We got to go.
If Marty and Matt and Sean and Gabe had not responded, it would have been a free fire zone.
Would have walked around town to shoot.
Anybody would have stepped out to see what the excitement was, he would have shot him and killed him. So they saved a bunch of people's lives.
I've had people ask me over and over, and I love it when they do. Hey, if you would have known he was out of the scene, would that have changed things? Not one bit. When people call the police, we have to go. And I don't regret one thing that I did that night. I thank God every day that it was me. Because I wouldn't wish this upon anyone. It's made me a better man, a better husband, a better father, because of all this. And what wasn't said was my girlfriend in the driveway was really my girlfriend. We were 2 weeks away from getting married. And I got shot. But they married us in the hospital. The nurses and the doctors had found out that it was my wedding day, and I'm laid up in a hospital shot. And the preacher showed up and family showed up. They married us. I don't remember it. But we have children now, so I'm screwed. She owns me. You know, it's just crazy. But that gentleman who shot me, right after Guthrie returned fire, that let him know that, look, these guys aren't playing around. They're coming. He stepped around the corner, offed himself.
That's what a lot of police get a lot of grief, and some of it's, you know, we deserve. But that night, the doctor said when I got to Marty, he had about a minute to live. He was right about a minute to live. And then all these guys showing up, they didn't have rifles. They all had 9mm handguns, and they stood right there at that perimeter. They didn't back down. I mean, they had every reason they could have gotten their car and left. You know, we're not prepared for this. But there was about, out of the scene, there was 8 police cars in the scene. And when I say scene, it's probably about twice the size of this room. There was 8 police cars, and 7 of them were Anderson police cars and 1 state police car. So Anderson showed up in force. You know, when the devil came to Pendleton, Anderson.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. That, I mean, there's probably nothing scarier than gunfire coming from you don't know where, coming from the darkness, and you being shot down. The fact that those guys held their ground, and the fact that you freaking came in sandals and all and said, fuck it, I'm getting there. It's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, well, like you said, everything that could have went wrong to get you to that point, but then everything that could have gone right went right in the end. I can't believe
it. You pulled up right where you needed to. I mean, I thought that you had some special knowledge of where he was.
I had no clue.
Just blind luck.
Yeah, you're following the police lights.
I drove to the red lights.
And drove right up to him.
Within about 30 feet of him.
Like you said, and I know, you know, as a firefighter, you only have so much blood. If you hit an artery like that, you only have not much time before you can bleed out. Do you ever know how much you did bleed out, or do you know?
All I know is that the doctors had told Joe I had about a minute left.
They gave him, I think, 3 units at the hospital before they put him on a helicopter. Mm. The belt of I'm wearing now is actually the belt that I put the tourniquet on. When I wear, what I forgot to tell you was I got blown up in Iraq. I got hit by a couple of IDs, and when I got home, they put me on all kinds of don't kill your neighbor medicine, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And
we talked about that earlier.
Yeah, I just, I blew up, you know, it was like, eat, sit. And I gained up to 298 pounds, and that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I still look good, though. But
Yeah, you do.
And so I took myself off the medicine. My wife's a nurse, so I took myself off the medicine, and I just started losing weight, you know, and I lost enough weight. And, of course, you know, with 4 kids at the time, I got, you know, I'm on a budget, so I didn't, instead of buying clothes, I just got a belt. And it's an old belt I had. I bought it for $12 at JCPenney's back when. But I just kept taking up notches. And I had the belt I'm wearing is actually the belt I put the tourniquet on with. And I wear this belt every day, you know, that I have to wear a belt, because when I put it on, it reminds me, okay, today's not the day. And when I shave, you know, when I walk by a window and I see my reflection, you know, today's not the day. That's the mindset we as police officers, firefighters, young comedians, that's the mindset we have to have, you know.
Yeah.
I was born to die, well, but just not today.
It's an incredible, incredible story, and I can't thank you enough for coming in and telling it to us. I mean, I'm honored to be in the room with both of you as brothers in blue. You guys were put on this earth to do that job, and thank God that you followed that path. And I just want to tell you, thank you for your service. You know, it almost brings a tear to my eye to sit in here and watch two brothers and tell this story and just try to put myself in that position. And I think your family is very fortunate that you were surrounded by good people at the right time, and fortunate that you have a warrior spirit and that you were about to let that motherfucker end things for you and you were going to get to tomorrow. So thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely.
This has been a Behind the Badge special edition episode.
Can I say final thought?
Yeah.
Tip your trash man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It depends on who it is, I guess.
Yeah. And you have the baddest ass trash man of all trash men.
He's a bad ass.
Just such an incredible story. Like, took my breath away. I want to thank McAfee for letting us have this episode to showcase what Behind the Badge could be as a podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Please let us know. Our audience is really good about letting us know when they like somebody or when they like something and when they don't. But let us know how you felt about this episode so we know. We can get some feedback. For myself, Jeff Vibbert, Ryan Colley, and Chris Lytle, this has been the Pat McAfee Show.